Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Jonathan Taplin, founder and director emeritus of the Innovation Lab at the Annenberg School for Communication at the University of Southern California, where he specializes in international communications management and digital media entertainment. He began his entertainment career as tour manager for Bob Dylan and the band and produced Martin Scorsese's first feature film, Mean Streets. He went on to produce television documentaries, including The Prize and Cadillac Desert for PBS, and 12 feature films, including The Last Waltz, Under Fire, and To Die For. His latest book is Move Fast and Break Things, How Google, Facebook, and Amazon Cornered Culture and Undermined Democracy. And he has an op-ed at the New York Times, Google's Disturbing Influence Over Think Tanks. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jonathan Taplin.
Good to be here, Ian.
Well, thank you, John. And tell me about, or tell our audience about what's at issue here with the New America Foundation, who, by the way, their scholars are frequent guests on this program. So I find them to be a useful resource.
Yeah. So New America Foundation funded a group inside there called the Open Markets Group, which was headed by a guy named Barry Lynn. And they were the most important group of scholars looking at monopoly in America and how the increasing concentration of business power has increased, not just in the tech sector, but all over the economy, whether it's airlines, pharmaceuticals, wherever. And the Open Markets Group put out a statement after the European Union sanctioned Google with a $2.7 billion fine a few weeks ago. And they put out a statement applauding the EU and saying that American antitrust regulators should follow their example. And Eric Schmidt, the executive chairman of Google, who provides most of the financing for New America Foundation, was incredibly angry about this and essentially told the leader of New America, Anne-Marie Slaughter, that she had to get rid of the Open Markets Group. And she then wrote Barry Lynn an email saying that they had to leave by September 1 and essentially fired them. And this is exactly the kind of political pressure that Google applies all over the world in terms of on not just academic institutions, but think tanks and others in order to keep the political narrative in their favor and not have people who oppose them.
Well, and this is the company that his motto is don't be evil, but the importance of the significance here is that think tanks, and they are obviously on the right and on the left, and I think you could fairly say that the New America Foundation is a centrist think tank, but by and large they're about intellectual inquiry. So this is a big issue, isn't it, in that sense, you know, of anti-intellectualism. Surely we have enough anti-intellectualism with the Trump administration without Google adding to it.
Well, I mean, what's especially disturbing is that, you know, the role of think tanks is underappreciated in terms of how they play a role in kind of the Washington consensus and how opinion is created both for legislators and regulators. And so by having such influence on the people who write these papers that are then read in the committees and things like that is really a kind of problematic action. And here's the thing. The Wall Street Journal did a survey and showed that Google was spending $2 million a year paying academics to write papers that would be favorable to Google's position and basically saying Google is not a monopoly. And they even went so far as to pay Judge Robert Bork shortly before he died to write a paper saying that they weren't a monopoly when they were in trouble with the Federal Trade Commission. And some of that money is dispensed through think tanks, and some is just paid directly to academics. But out of that input since 2009, they got 100 papers from academics that were favorable to them, and they got 100 papers out of think tanks that were favorable to them. And this is their way of kind of currying influence through dominating the communications channels of Washington, D.C.
Well, Eric Schmidt, who is the biggest funder of the New America Foundation and one of the top executives at Google, I understand that during the Obama administration, he was the number one visitor. He was logged in more times to the White House than any other single person in the entire 8 years of the Obama administration. So this is a man who clearly understands how to wield political clout in Washington.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole chapter in my book called Google's Regulatory Capture, and essentially, not only did Schmidt visit the White House more than any other CEO by a long shot, but then Schmidt put people from Google into the various agencies in the Obama administration. So the person who ran the patent office was formerly the person who ran Google's patent practice. The person who was the assistant attorney general for antitrust in the Obama administration was the person who had been Google's antitrust attorney. You know, Google had people high up in the Federal Communications Agency. So it was pernicious. It was everywhere. In the White House Office of Technology Policy was run by two Google people. So there was a kind of revolving door between Google and the government. And what's astonishing is one could say, well, okay, Eric Schmidt is a liberal and he was helping Hillary Clinton. But literally the day after Clinton lost, he was out there communicating with Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner in the hopes of getting in bed with Trump. And by the way, not only did he extend invitations to them to come to his conference in Italy, but he also went to the White House and railed on about how Trump was going to be a great help to the economy with all his new initiatives. So it's very clear he has hardly any political conscience whatsoever. He's just going to go where the money is.
Let's talk about your book and the extent to which it has started a debate in a number of newspaper columns, and there's been a pretty robust response to your article in Thursday's New York Times, Google's Disturbing Influence Over Think Tanks, not the least of which is a denial by Anne-Marie Slaughter, former State Department official under Hillary Clinton, now the head of New America. It sounds like you're getting under Google's skin.
I think I am. You know, it's funny. When the book was published, it was seen as the ideas that I was calling for, which was a renewed antitrust scrutiny of these large tech companies like Google, Amazon, and Facebook, was seen as kind of an outlier. And today, more and more people on both sides of the political aisle are saying this needs to come out. I mean, Elizabeth Warren yesterday tweeted that what Google did to the Open Markets Group was really wrong and was disturbing. And quite honestly, I see this coming from both the right and the left. I mean, Orrin Hatch has said that, you know, these big tech companies are too powerful. And Cory Booker and Elizabeth Warren and Amy Klobuchar have been critical of them. So I have a sense that something essential is changing here, and that people are understanding that political power, when you have companies that have so much money and so much influence on our culture, are causing problems, and not the least of which was, you know, the problems that are caused, you know, when these platforms like YouTube and Facebook are really the way that fake news gets deployed throughout the country.
Along with real news, I think something like 3/4 of Americans get their information from Facebook and YouTube. So
right.
That is a huge problem. And as we know, Stephen Bannon and the Mercers used the targeting, micro-targeting, in their campaign to defeat Hillary Clinton very skillfully, using social media with fake news, using Russian bots to amplify their effect. But you mentioned the power.
Can I give you a little factoid that I just learned today from someone in the intelligence community, which is that Eric Schmidt's daughter worked for SCL, which is the company that controlled Cambridge Analytica, as an intern.
Really?
So that is a very strange little crossover for political facts.
Covering your bets, yeah. And Cambridge Analytica, of course, is the company that Mercer owns and that Steve Bannon's on the board of, that were really, I think, in many ways, probably more responsible than anybody else, although, you know, you can include the Russians and Hillary's terrible campaign and the FBI director.
They couldn't have done what they did if there hadn't been these two open platforms, Facebook and YouTube, in which, you know, you could totally manipulate this stuff, and there was nobody at the control of these platforms to stop this fake news. I mean, if you think about it, YouTube, for instance, there is no pornography on YouTube. So that means that YouTube has very sophisticated artificial intelligence that blocks pornography from being uploaded. So when someone tries to upload porn onto YouTube, it gets sent off into a separate queue and a human looks at it. And if for some reason it happens to be a National Geographic ethnographic video, maybe it gets uploaded, but the rest of it just goes in the trash. Well, they could do that with all sorts of things. They could filter out the 44,000 ISIS propaganda videos that are on YouTube. They could filter out a lot of the fake news. I mean, if someone's putting forth an article that says the Pope endorses Donald Trump, it wouldn't take a whole lot of artificial intelligence energy to understand that that is not true. And so, I mean, these platforms are just the way in which Bannon and Cambridge Analytica was able to do their deeds.
Well, but when you mentioned a minute ago Google being a rich company, that's an understatement. I think it's about the richest company in the world and in the history of the world. So give us a context here compared, say, to ExxonMobil and other big international, multinational companies.
Okay, so 10 years ago, the largest corporations in the world were General Electric, ExxonMobil, Shell, Citibank, companies like that. Today, the largest companies in the world are Apple, Google, Amazon, Microsoft, and Facebook. In other words, the five largest corporations in the world are all tech companies when you do it by market capitalization. So pretty soon, maybe in the next 2-3 weeks, Apple will be worth $1 trillion, and Google is moving close to being worth $800 billion. So, I mean, that's probably larger than the economies of two-thirds of the countries in the world, maybe three-quarters of the countries in the world. So, I mean, these are sovereign states, and they act that way. They don't want anybody to interfere with their corporate behavior, and so they're just kind of charging ahead.
And so let's then compare this situation we're in now with the monopoly power of Google, Amazon, Facebook, and Microsoft, the biggest corporations in the world, and Apple. And we also know that, for example, they park their profits offshore, so they don't pay taxes, in spite of, at least that's the case with Apple, and I'm not sure about the others. So
no, they all use the same.
Oh, they probably do, yeah. So
all use the same tricks to shelter their profits.
So they're not as virtuous as they'd like us to think in terms of paying their fair share to the government coffers. But let's compare this then, since we've made the comparison with ExxonMobil. How does this relate, to example, the breakup of the big antitrust breakup under Teddy Roosevelt of Standard Oil? Because it seems to me that at the end of the day, that's what's necessary. These are powerful monopolies, and they have to be broken up.
Well, it's very similar. I mean, if you think about it, people say, use the word, data is the new oil, right? So what is Google or Facebook but a data extraction organization, just in the same way that Exxon or Standard Oil was a oil extraction? They take your data, and you, the average millennial, spends 2 hours a day on Facebook, and that's free labor for Facebook to help them manufacture profiles of those people that they then sell to advertisers. Now, when they basically do that, they control a very scarce resource, which is between Facebook, Google, and Amazon, they control more data on more people in the world than any other corporation in the world. Now, when Teddy Roosevelt said, okay, Standard Oil has 80% of the oil business in the United States, and that's too big because it makes sure that nobody else can compete with them. Well, Google controls 88% of the search advertising business in the United States and 91% in the rest of the world. Nobody else can compete in that game in selling search advertising and selling search. And Facebook controls about 75% of the social media business when you include Instagram and WhatsApp, which are companies that Facebook owns. So these companies have extraordinary monopoly power, and they're exercising. So if you think of a company like a small LA company that tried to compete with Facebook in the social media sphere called Snapchat, so they had some very innovative features. It's called Snapchat Stories. Facebook, they were starting to get a lot of traction, and Facebook offered to buy them for $3 billion. They turned Facebook down, and Facebook said, well, you made a big mistake in turning us down. And so Facebook essentially ripped off Snapchat with every feature they had, and now it's called Facebook Stories and Instagram Stories and WhatsApp Stories. They didn't even bother to change the name of it. And Snapchat went public at $28 a share, and its stock is now at $13 a share. So they just basically almost put them out of business. So, I mean, this is the way monopolies act. They act like bullies, and that's exactly what happened yesterday to the kids at New America. The bully didn't want them to be writing about Google and calling them a monopoly, so they got rid of them.
Well, given the analogy between breaking up the trusts, the Standard Oil Trust, in the beginning of the 20th century under President Roosevelt, and the need to do so at some point or other because of Google, you said that 10 years ago, ExxonMobil was the biggest corporation on the planet, and now, 10 years later, Google is. So in 10 years' time, where will Google be if it's not restrained?
Well, it'll be a lot bigger than it is now, because Google is moving into many other kinds of businesses, just as we see Amazon moving into the grocery business. So Google is going to move into the transportation business with the autonomous car patents that it has owned. It's going to move into the medical information business. There's nothing that's going to stop Google from getting bigger, because quite frankly, this is what economists call a market failure. There is no venture capitalist who's going to fund a company to go up against Google in the search advertising business. It's just not going to happen. So there's no market solution to this, and that's why ultimately it's only the government that can come in and say that this is important, that this concentration affects our economic well-being. It means that fewer people can start up new companies if all this concentration, more and more services are getting merged into these companies. They certainly are going to own the artificial intelligence business because they have all the data. And it essentially means less freedom for Americans in the sense that fewer and fewer companies are competing for our labor. And so, you know, that allows the employers to gain more power over how we do business and what we do. So, I mean, I think we have to kind of stop this now. We have to bring, because these companies are only going to get bigger. As, you know, nobody even put up a fight about Amazon buying Whole Foods the other day. And, you know, watch what Amazon does to the rest of the grocery business, just the way they've kind of made the business of being a retailer. Like Sears and Kmart are probably going to go bankrupt this year, and they blame it on Amazon.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Good to be here, Ian.
Thank you. And again, let me speak with Jonathan Taplin, founder and director emeritus of the Innovation Lab at the Annenberg School for Communication at the University of Southern California, where he specializes in international communications management and digital media entertainment. He began his entertainment career as tour manager for Bob Dylan and the band and produced Martin Scorsese's first feature film, Mean Streets. He went on to produce television documentaries, including The Prize and Cadillac Desert for PBS, and 12 feature films, including The Last Waltz, Under Fire, and To Die For. His latest book is Move Fast and Break Things, How Google, Facebook, and Amazon Cornered Culture and Undermined Democracy. And he has an op-ed at the New York Times, Google's Disturbing Influence Over Think Tanks. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. We can contact me and scroll down the right-hand side and sign up for iTunes podcast. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.